At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
And this paper detailed how the CIA's mind control program, MKUltra, was not stopped in 1973, as the CIA had told Congress. Hey guys, it's Jose Galison. You're watching No Way Jose. You can find this on YouTube, all the major odd podcatchers, and Rumble as well. This is going live on YouTube and Rumble right now for those who are interested. I don't think Rumble, at least not on my channel, I haven't got where it patches the comments through. I thought they did recently. So I'll try to check over the Rumble and see if there's questions occasionally, but it is what it is until they patch that or whatever the heck's going on in Nerd World with that. Today my guest is William Ramsey, and I think BX might be joining us in about 20-30 minutes, just when she can. It is what it is. Schedules conflict, but we'll be talking probably the first little bit anyways about like 09 AI ideology, and then kind of get into some new major pieces of media and our thoughts on it that came out recently in this story. It looks like it's picking up steam. Like I said, this is a live stream, but I do want to remind you guys, most of my content I usually will stream to my patrons, and then about a week later I'll make it public, because I normally don't cover breaking news. This is only recently, this has kind of been, but I'll do that for like foreign policy and certain other stuff too. But for the most part, most of my stuff is behind the paywall. Like that little intro you saw at the beginning, that was clipped from my Jonestown series with Austin Picard. So that one I think has like 3 behind the paywall right now. So just saying, patreon.com/NoWayJose2020, the lowest level is $2, you get that early stuff. The highest level is my sponsors, I read them off every episode. I have Toad, who's my co-host on Tower Gang, at Tower Gang Toad, then at Abrogate D's, then Kevin B. Clark, a full-time guitarist and private music teacher in the New York area, then at Zoveerack, then at _InfiniteZeal, then Jacob Daniel of the Biblical Anarchy podcast, I was on his show not too long ago, at Biblical Anarchy, Tim Tuttle at Jolly on Klebold, he's the one who actually made that edit. Then at Stinky Sock 420, he's a singer of the band Bender, which is a metalcore band, which is kind of like that music you just heard there. If you like that kind of music, go check him out. I also want to give a shout out. I'm not doing a full-on ad read for my, I guess you could call him my corporate sponsor, or I need to come up with terms for this. But I did want to remind you guys, at the $5 level, we're giving away a couple bags of coffee this month. Maybe we'll swap it up next month. Use Jose at checkout at foxandsons.com. That's the way you can credit me. That way it'll keep coming back to me. Gift 15% off your orders of 30s or more. Orders of $37.99 and over, always ship free. Guys, are you guys ready to get into it? I'm getting very schizophrenic covering this stuff lately, but we're about to dive deep into the ideology of 09A, and I have just the man on for it. Hey, William, how you doing?
I'm good.
Good. No problem. I've actually been absorbing the hell out of your content recently, because you've done a lot of work on 09A, which obviously that's a big part of the 764 star. I mean, I say big, but I guess it depends on your perspective, what big means. I think in a certain sense, in a practical sense, I'm starting to think it's not like, obviously all these guys are 09A guys. I mean, it's just understanding the dynamic, but I do think, especially for my audience, we're very interested in kind of the strings, like where influence is being played. So I think that might play a part with the 09A thing. That's what it seems like maybe going on here. So you seem to be the guy for that, because I believe you wrote a book on it. You've wrote a bunch of other stuff. I know, like, I'm usually like a true crime guy. I haven't really been dabbling in the occult world for a while. So this is, a lot of people are like kind of surprised that I'm even in this world now, because I'm usually more like the almost skeptical kind of guy, and not like the guy who would say satanic panic maybe a couple years ago and actually mean it in the unironic way. Could you give an introduction for yourself to the audience? I don't think I'll do it justice, and let them know maybe, you know, kind of why you're kind of the ideal guy to bring on to kind of talk about 09A and, you know, kind of their ideology and such.
I wrote my first book in 2010 about Aleister Crowley. Then I followed up with a true crime book about the West Memphis Three, 2012. Then I wrote kind of a history book about Crowley's influence on the 20th century politics and culture. That was Children of the Beast. And then my fourth book was this one that we're talking about, Global Death Cult. I published that in 2021. And then I wrote a book last year within the last 4 or 5 months about the Smiley Face Killers. And I've done 5 documentaries, 1 Occult Hollywood, 2 on the Smiley Face Killers, 1 on Occult 9/11, and then Children of the Beast. So those can be found at my Patreon. So those were things that I was interested in. I really is just a, I was researching myself, like, after 9/11, I was a 9/11 researcher, independent, and really not above board. I wasn't even interested in like being an author in any way, shape, or form. But all these books kind of followed each other strangely. When I was done with one, I would have enough material to do something about another. And that's kind of where the Global Death Cult kind of came out of, was these recent killings that had happened in 2019, 2020. And so I recorded them. They came out of Adam Waffen, but they were connected to this other kind of esoteric Nazi group that came out of England called the Order of Nine Angles. So because of those happenings, I wrote them in a book, and I tried to lay it out and make it clear kind of about that ideology, the ideology of the Order of Nine Angles. And that kind of ethos in the Order of Nine Angles, I think, is the same in 764. It's kind of a nihilism, amorality, anti-Christian, anti-Nazarene, what they would call it. So they're above the law mentality. So I think that there are clear ideological similarities between the ONA and 764. And some of those people who have been caught, and a lot of the ONA guys were caught with what they call now is the acronym is CSAM, child abuse something material.
I think but they were sexual. Some of the
some of the other guys in 09A were caught with a lot of that kind of material. And then some of these guys in 764 obviously are doing it. But Angel Almeida, for example, I think he was a 2021 case. He was definitely a member of ONA and doing really nasty, like, child abuse stuff too. But his drawings gave him away. Like, he was drawing the dark gods with blood rituals and things like that. That's like pure Order of Nine Angle.
Too deep behavior, in the lore to like be practice. Confused yeah, for just too deep in the lore to be confused for like a. I know, copycat or just liking the aesthetic.
Specific to it. It's specific to the O9A. Maybe there's certain rituals people would do for the OTO, or they would do it for Church of Satan or something like that. But those were very specific to the, I mean, I knew it right away what he was doing. Because I've seen other members do it. There was a guy out of England. His last name was Fleming, and he was kind of doing the same stuff, bleeding on papers. There was actually another criminal who was kind of ONA adjacent. His name was Daniel Hussein, and he did something like that. Like, he made a blood oath with a demon called Lucifuge-Rosafal or something like that, and then went out and killed 2 people at a birthday party. So these are things that come offline and come into the real world. And kind of that's why I wanted to write the O9A, because I didn't know much about it when it first started researching it, and I don't think the public really know. And I think it's a new phenomenon that without, just like 764, some of the cult and these cultish that really start off the internet. Really, that's really where the foundation of its distribution of its ideas comes from.
Someone just brought up, just said it was Lucifer.
Lucifer, thank you. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Did you have any more thoughts? I didn't want to cut you off there.
Not really. I mean, that's basically all my work. I've kind of, I really wasn't going to stereotype myself as kind of an occult researcher. But at the time when I was putting out my material, nobody else was really talking about it. So it kind of made me irritated. So that's kind of like why I wrote the stuff. It was kind of like as a kind of a counterbalance to the kind of corporate media. Like, I've been screaming at the corporate media for decades. And they don't record things. Although there's a lot of guys, like we were talking in the pre-show, who cover the O9A. But I definitely picked subjects I thought people should know about but don't.
Yeah. I did find it interesting you mentioned Crowley, and that's kind of what set you down this road. And I can totally get where you got there from here, because I initially, the show started as like a libertarian theory type show. I mean, just generally whatever I wanted to talk about. And then I started getting a little bit into parapolitics. I did an OKC series, which I've kind of probably what most people know me for, which kind of blew up. Probably did like something like 15 hours. And so then I started going down that trail, kind of, you know, seeing the feds and their interplay there. And at one point, I think I just, you know, for shits and gigs, read some Aleister Crowley, you know, or looked into it on some podcast series somewhere. And then once I started noticing, especially when I ended like parapolitics with the, you know, things like cults, you know, say Finder's cult, stuff along those lines, I did start noticing that that the Aleister Crowley ideology seemed to really, whenever these occult things come up, seem to be such parallels. You'd see it all the time, especially his idea. I mean, I'm going to butcher it, but essentially the idea was he was trying to do the worst things possible, essentially. And it was kind of almost being the apotheosis, or you know, the opposite of God, essentially, and to make him one in a sense. So and you see this with a lot of occult, and I think we see this with O9A in a lot of ways as well. So I see how you got from one to the other. Once you start seeing those patterns, it's hard not to. But let's just get into, I know this is kind of a huge question to ask, but I guess you probably would be best at kind of giving a rundown and maybe a place to start. What is O9A's ideology? I mean, I've, like I said, I listened to a bunch of your stuff recently, so I could probably give a butchered version, but obviously I have you here, and so I want to pass this on to my audience, because I think most people haven't really dug into this lore. And I think, honestly, I think a lot of my audience probably does immediately dismiss it as being like Fed stuff, which to some extent, I think
they do it all the time. Yeah. That happens with Crowley, too.
Yeah, they do. To some extent, that is a thing. Yeah.
There's no real occult. It's all Fed, so nobody sits around and writes books or does rituals because they're doing it because the Feds are behind them, even though there may not even be an intellectual, you know, a federal intel or operation in Ghana, but it's definitely the CIA. Yeah. I hear that all the time. So I feel
which, to be fair, I think both can coexist. The idea that it needs to be one or the other.
Sure, but I mean, it's like saying like the witches are, you know, Jill de Rye in the 15th century was working for the CIA or something crazy like that. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
these guys are engaging in occult activity for results. They want to either have a demon or have something in power in the world. So that's what they do. Either whether it's a dark god or whether it's Satan or whether it's just an idea, they're doing it for a reason, right? They're doing these rituals and things or whatever. I went over all that stuff to Ken Lanning, Satanic Panic. It's just a complete joke. A lot of the people behind the Satanic Panic concept are occultists. So like, why are you being afraid of what I'm doing? You're panicking. Well, oftentimes it leads to like somebody like Elise Pollard in Central California getting taken out to a park and murdered. Because you guys want to be a famous rock band. Like, that's the way you think. So
and
these
I think
things happen.
Real quick, I think there is a fair point to that. Because, full honesty, you actually said it on a post, on a reply to one of your posts or something. I am an agnostic atheist, and I've gone through that period of time where I was that edgy Reddit atheist. And I do know there is a subsect of atheists, which I've always found this super cringe, where they do get into like Levian Satanism or something like that. And I do think there probably is sinister stuff. I've never really dug into it enough towards the top level, but I do think there probably is some people who do it just to be edgy and to have something similar to church where they have a community. But sure. I will say this typically, so these people get riled up and there is some truth to it, but it's like one of those things like, you know, with the Fed and the occult thing, it's like both can coexist. Like, you know, these people, there can be people who behave in this way. And
yeah,
that's
they can
silly.
Coexist independently.
Yes, exactly.
They don't have to always be over it. Yeah. So, I mean, it's the thing is that some people act on these things. Some people go looped out Christianity and think, you know, whatever. Like, there's a lot of crazy Christian groups. Like, I think Waco, Texas, or some of these other separatists, and some of these things aren't really adhering to the pure ideology that's in the Gospels. So it doesn't even just have to be like occultism. It could just be some, what is it? The guys who were behind the Hale Comet thing. Those guys were, yeah. I mean, he was supposedly a Christian, but they did. You know, self-mutilation, transhumanism stuff. So, I guess my point is, you know, these are ideologies that people act upon. They have a philosophy. They have a praxis, a practice. And 09A was really set apart from these other kind of strains of occult, modern strains of occultism, like the OTO, Church of Satan, Temple of Set. And this guy was somebody who was very much not wanting to have anything to do with Jewish mysticism or Nazarene. So what do you call in general? It was anything out of kind of like Semitic background. So he kind of created his own system out of kind of pagan Albion, you know, pre-Christian England, early England. And the integrated all this stuff, really, it's really actually more, what is it? It's just like an early thing. So he basically started drafting it. He was writing it. This is pre-internet. So he was writing just manual after three-page manual. And those three pages turned into a book. And those were sent out through P.O. boxes way before your time, probably, in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah,
and that's well the, just like in a, on like advertisements at the back of some occult magazine. And then it grew. And then what really happened is that corpus grew and other people got involved. And the way that he defined it, this group was against OTO and against the Temple of Set and against the church. They thought that they were more of like carnival barkers, which Anton LaVey actually was. So he thought they weren't serious. And the thing that did distinguish the ONA, at least in his mind, is their propensity to kill people. That was the distinctive. That was their distinction. And there's a whole chapter in my book where he's literally writing and contesting and comparing his group to people in the Temple of Set. There's actually something from Michael Aquino and some of these other people. And they kind of confirm that David Myatt, who was the guy, was writing under pseudonyms. He was writing under Stephen Brown and Anton Long.
He still does.
So he was really the progenitor. Very smart, intelligent guy. Seems to have family money, traveled, was in Singapore. So cult, you know, a little higher culture than most kind of Nazis, which, you know, it's not usually the smartest group of people, in my opinion. But so that would be it. And then they just kind of, he integrated all of these interesting concepts that people could do. And, you know, just like any corpus, it grew over time. But I think really what made the ONA grow was the internet. Is then it became kind of something people could find and read about cheaply and, you know, without having to pay anything, right? And I think that's the way Myatt intended it, is was to have like a philosophy or an ideology without rigid, like a rigid practice, like you have to do this. You can just integrate whatever you want. And so people read it, and then they had these really cells is what we would call them, but they would be, they called them Nexians. So they had these little groups that seeded all over the world, and really it grew and grew. And then, you know, criminal crime surfaced, and then it came to the awareness of like governments and things like that. And it became affiliated with other, it really was a neo-Nazi occult group. I mean, it's kind of redundant. When you say Nazi occultism, it's actually pretty much the same, but it was kind of like a modern take, a post-World War II take on kind of Nazism. The same ideas like the new man, the aeonic change, thousand-year Reich, right? Hitler was a believer in aeonic change, much like Crowley. And so these guys believe in aeonic change, and there's going to be a galactic man, Homo Galacticus, and then there's a lesser, and they're special, and they're above the law. And I go into all this stuff. They lie all the time. They believe in presencing entities, and they have a septenary way. So it's a sevenfold way on the tree of word, the tree of fate, where you ascend. And I think the third or fourth step is to find an offer, a sacrifice, and then kill them. That's like your step up. So they're as part of their written ideology, whether it's put into practice or not, is to kill somebody.
Yeah, which that is the key point. I think this is where there's like a crossroads, and this is it right here. I think where a lot of people either come to the conclusion of this is something to be, you know, genuinely concerned about, some crazy, you know, group of elites doing, you know, spooky stuff, or elites, I use that loosely, or it's just all made up. Because this is kind of my understanding where the ideology kind of goes dark a little bit, because then it gets to, I'm assuming once you've called to someone or something along those lines, that would mean, you know, that they probably have a different forms of communication at that point. But I think a lot of people, you know, play up the calling thing as if it never happens, or, you know, this is all made up. Which I guess that could, I guess it's theoretically possible that was the intention when it was made, to be just some big LARP, but that would be a really weird troll, and it kind of leads left down, put a lot of effort into creating this system of belief that leads to this. So I guess just kind of like, what are your thoughts on that, about, I know, just the, you know, the divide between people who
real
see
world
it as all
events
fake or something else?
Real yeah. events. Prove that to be incorrect. There are people mm-hmm. committing crimes, trying to contact the ONA, or being influenced by the ideology or infiltration. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ethan Meltzer just got convicted. He was literally in the same jail facility as Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein in New York City. So he was trying to set people up to have them killed on by the ONA. So that's mm-hmm. one crime. There was Woodard out of Orange County. He killed a young man named Blaze Ballantyne and buried him in a park somewhere, but he was more of kind of Adam Waffen, but some of those ideas had permeated in there. There was Giampa, there's killings that took place in Adam Waffen. There's all kinds of associations of ONA infiltrating Adam Waffen, a certain part. So these guys are acting out some of these ideas. There's no question about it. Mm-hmm. And it's happening all over the world. Like, there's other ONA associated crimes and things like that. I mentioned Daniel Hussein. Fleming was another one. So I think it's just a nice, safe. I think it's interesting to see how people analyze this, like how they immediately, it's just an interesting way people think, like, oh, it's all an intel op. It was created as an intel op. It's pretty clear that Maya was part of a Gladio Stay Behind Network.
Yeah.
It was Combat 88. But like, people did, like, there was the National Socialist Movement. There was a guy who was the London nail bomber who blew people away, killed two, mm-hmm. and, like, injured hundreds of people associated with Nazi ideology. So you can say that the Nazi ideology is all fake, but the real world event is this guy took, he was associated mm-hmm. with Mayat, who started the ONA. You don't know the totality of what people have absorbed through the ONA, but.
Yeah,
it's it goes all the way. The culture of the ONA, if you want to see like, you don't think this ideology, or it's dead, or it's not alive, or it's not affecting your real world, all you have to do is watch Ed Sheeran. You can go watch Bad Habits. You can read my book. It would help mm-hmm. because you would understand all the symbology that's in there. That's within a 3.5 minute song called Bad Habits. It's all there. They're just laying out ONA ideology. It's been listened to 575 million times on YouTube and probably a billion times worldwide. And they're singing to you the ONA ideology. Maybe it's just like the Raelians. They're only looking for 1 in 100 people. But look at 1 in 100 people out of, you know, 1.8 billion listens or something like that. And his association. And you can see the smiley face tattoos he's got and the yeah. smiley face and all stuff. So.
Which I guess would be a good thing for us to get into, the smiley face, because what I was kind of getting at with, like, whether it's all, like the idea of the cullings or whatever, the killings, like, yes, we can obviously point to the ideology, but for those who want to say, like, question the idea of, like, I don't know, O9A not just being a runaway ideology, which I guess this would still kind of tie into it, but being more substantive, I guess, you know, or especially with, you know, the idea of the cullings, at least. I think the smiley face killings, I mean, I've listened to a lot of your stuff on that, and it seems to fit with the ideology, and I do think that gives us some jumping off points with, you know, kind of conversation of their ideology. Because and give people a better understanding, because I do think a lot of people are immediately dismissive of this, but once you start to wrap
That's
your
fine.
Head around
it, shows how people don't look into deep things much deeper than surface. They yeah. won't take time to read a book. I mean, yeah, I've talked to people so many. I mean, it's just like, have you read my book? No, I just came to this conclusion because I was in yeah. between video games, and that's how deep I thought about it. You know, it's, I mean, that's yeah. just where we're at. We're not yeah. a smart culture. It's not a book reading culture. People are shallow in America.
Yeah.
That's why the whole problem, like, so I feel these questions all the time. Why don't you read it for yourself? Why don't you look at this? You can go look at 764. Like, there's all kinds of cases that happened in the last 2 years that are real world events. I don't know how many victims those guys have. And then you're going to tell me that's some kind of intel op or something.
Yeah, which like, I mean, it could be. I mean, you have to get
pretty out there
with your ideas. Yeah, I mean, to sow chaos, and so this would be the idea. I think many people would say that. Then the 09A has become the op, essentially, or something along those lines. But that gets to a deeper level. But I get what you're getting at. But yeah, with the smiley face killings, I do find interesting. I know there's a lot of, you know, I guess we'll have to lay out for the audience real quick what the MO for those and how that lines up with 09A belief. I guess a lot of stuff with water and some of their, you know, different lore within it and how that has explanatory power for it. So, I mean, if you want to, I guess, try to give a quick version of that for the audience.
Yeah, I mean, the smiley face killers phenomenon is the disappearance of young men to be found in water later, you know, oftentimes in a place previously searched. And it's often it's always late at night. They're at a bar, disappeared from friends. And so that's kind of how I came interested in ONA 9A, is like some kind of ideological overlap and similar stories really within the ONA of like committing crimes and things like that and getting away with it. So I don't have any proof outside of what I wrote in my books, but like there's clearly something unnervingly similar between the cases and the ideology.
Yeah. With the killings, I believe they were all in water. They typically were, you know, men in, you know, probably in the prime of their life, you know, typically, you know, salt of the earth types is like probably the best way to describe
a lot of Christians, overt Christians.
Yeah. And I believe, yeah. So with that, obviously I don't think, there actually hasn't been anyone caught for this. Although there seems to be, there have been other cases where it looks like maybe they were going to do that and got busted. I believe if I recall correctly,
have been people busted for crimes, but maybe not specifically for these types of crimes.
Yeah. Something very, like very, very similar. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I did a whole section on offender typology. So there's a lot of kind of similar over. There's like the family in Adelaide. There is Stephen Port in London. There's a lot of similar people or people with interests or underground stuff. So I think that the police aren't aware that it's very easy for the police to write off the smiley face crimes as accidents. And I think the public and the families, almost all the families of these victims say something bad happened to my child. Like they weren't clumsy. A lot of these guys are super athletic actually. So like for them to like suddenly make it to a river and then fall in and not be able to get out is a joke. Yeah. So most of these people met by misadventure, in my opinion, are the ones that are in my book for sure. Like I've looked at those cases and the answer is why, what's the motive? Like, why are people doing this? What's the deal? Why does somebody want to do that? Are they going out hunting? Are they sexually motivated killers? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Which that was a component. It did seem to be, there was a trend where they would, and I don't know. I mean, my vibe, my feeling I get from this with the gay side of it, because it does seem to be some of these people were on Grindr and stuff like that. And right. I would assume that might've been just a method to which they were finding people. I don't know. I mean, that would be my feeling, but that's just completely an assumption just on what I've listened to of your stuff. So I might be wrong, but that's just kind of the vibe I get, is that maybe that's the case, or maybe they are looking for homosexual males, that type. But I would just assume that was just kind of a mechanism to find people. That did seem to be a through line. So maybe there was some sexual component, but it looks like these people are getting abducted, disappearing for a period of time, and then ending up in water. Essentially, and it looks like a drowning is what it looks like here. So, I mean, where these people disappear to, who knows, but if for some reason it's just kind of a drowning is what it always gets written off on, even with them being disappeared for a period of time. We have BX joining us now, but sorry, you go on, William.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey, we were just talking about the smiley face killings.
I heard.
I don't know if you do. Yeah. Do you have any thoughts, BX?
I do.
Yeah.
Well, so not with the smiley face killers so much, but you know, recently there's been like kind of a resurgence of interest around the smiley face killers, specifically with like the serial killers in Chicago and in Austin, right, where I live. And so I find this curious because my whole life I've lived in Austin, and there's always been deaths at the river. I mean, and it's actually kind of funny because when all this started coming out, I was the first to kind of be like, doubt that this has anything to do with anything, because I mean, people have always died, and yeah, more people are dying now, but that's just because there's a huge boom in population and people getting drunk over on Rainy Street, which is where they're falling in. But the spot of Lady Bird Lake where people are falling in is funny, because I used to do security work there. And I'm like a bodyguard, right? And she's like, yeah. But anyways, I had my big old blacked out Tahoe that would just sit in that cul-de-sac right there where people would fall in. And the buses would stop there. Like all the buses that were taking people downtown, that sounds bizarre, right? It's over by the Omni, I think, the hotel down there. And so the buses would pull in this cul-de-sac and let people out to go pee in the river. They would let drunk ass people out of the bus and say, go pee in the river. And then these guys would stumble down in the dark. I mean, and it's treacherous. Like, you know, there's no guardrail. There's no lights. People are just stumbling around. It's probably a 10-foot drop to the water, which doesn't seem like much. But when you're drunk and like, you know, shit face wasted and, you know, you hit your head, or maybe you don't, maybe you just drown. So no, it doesn't seem that to me was like sensational. I was like, I don't really think that this is so, you know, not the Chicago part. Now that I do think that there's something to that. And I have a friend named Nikki Luciano who does true crime stuff in Chicago, and she's been really big into this investigation. But in Austin, I joined this Facebook group of people who like basically was a whole bunch of like soccer moms who were just had too much time on their hands. And so they think they're like armchair sleuths, and they're like, we're going to solve the murders, right? It's like all these moms in a Facebook chat. And they're throwing out some pretty wild stuff. Well, this guy emerged on the scene named Ken Wax. Did you ever see any of that, Jose?
Yes, I did. I saw okay. him.
So what happened with Ken Wax is that he started to go like make these ridiculous TikTok videos about how I've been contacted by the team of super spies who are like, it was so absurd and ridiculous. This guy was so silly. And it was all like basically a ploy to sell his app or something, like market his app. But it was kind of sad because he was in these Facebook groups offering the parents like paid Zoom calls to like help them find their loved ones or help them find their loved ones' killers. And then he was just like basically exploiting them and taking their money. Like, fuck that guy. Right. So when I figured out what was happening, I started to talk out against them and be like, this guy's adding all of these unrelated deaths. Like he's adding deaths from like 20 miles away in like, you know, a homeless camp. Well, the reason that they're not finding the identities of most of these people is because they're homeless. They don't have identities, right? They don't have IDs, they don't have families. And so the majority of people who were on his list were homeless and found all over the place. Homeless people die. They drown, right? And so Nikki Luciano reaches out and she's pissed because she thinks that this is taking away from like the actual investigative work that she's doing around the smiley face stuff. And so together we kind of like, I mean, like we schemed a bit and we got that story to the Daily Dot, which is kind of like it's like a small little like kind of rumor mill, like tabloid almost, but they rolled the story about Ken Wax being full of crap. Right. And he actually responded to it. He didn't have to, like, he could have just not responded, but he did. And it ended up getting flamed by everybody on TikTok. And then like, I think the Rolling Stones ended up making a story about it. It was pretty crazy. So that's my story about how basically put this guy in his place because he was exploiting victims and lying.
Yeah. He discredited himself. He did a really good job of building his kind of online social media base. So he did a good job. But
well, did you see how he got started? He got started making these videos like whining about how Google had so many great perks, but they were actually exploiting people because they were paying them less so that they could have these amazing perks. And he was this whole labor exploitation argument based around how he could bring his dog to work or something.
Yeah, but then he morphed as like somebody was following me. Like he was like, saying, somebody's following me.
Yeah, he's like a man all in black, like showed up at my door and gave me this business card with the Eye of Horus on it. It's like, yeah, it was silly. But, you know, but in Austin, you know, I don't think, I mean, and people get murdered too. It's downtown. So yeah, people get mugged and tossed in the river. A lot of these guys weren't, a lot of these guys were, you know, weren't mugged. And there were some not suspicious deaths, but deaths were like, they weren't mugged, but they were drunk. They were drinking, you know, it's easy to fall in down there.
There's no question they're drinking, but it's basically a lake. I mean, it's not like the Colorado River or something like that.
It's a lake. Yeah, it's a lake. But the drop there at Lady Bird, at the Rainy Street.
At the Rainy End. At the end of it.
The drops are pretty steep. And, you know, you'd be surprised at how people can drown when they're that drunk without really even hitting their head, you know?
There's a couple, though. I think the Martinez kid, I don't think he had more than two beers. So that's kind of suspicious. I think one guy was definitely. Yeah, I think that was 2018.
Okay.
There was Christian Pugh who like disappeared. He was down for like 60 hours and then they found him in some brushes. Like he was clearly drugged.
That happens too. I mean, people do get drugged for sure.
I mean, a good MO would be one that could be easily mistaken for accidents would have actual legitimate accidents that do also occur like that. So,
yeah.
They found another body today.
I mean, and that's like you can go back though through the years and see how many people have drowned at Lady Bird Lake, and it's like really a lot. Like, you know, it's people drown there all the time. But also people do get drugged, do people get mugged, do people get murdered downtown, you know? But I don't think it but the other thing is Ken Wax's narrative was like trying to lump in murders from 20 years ago with the same. I'm like, that sounds pretty wild, Ken.
I mean,
that it would happen into, like 20 years.
If you buy into the 09A idea of like what's, you know, their ideology. I mean, culling. Obviously like, yeah, the culling like this, and this has been around for a while. They would totally follow. I think. But one thing I did want to, before we get into kind of the new current event stuff that came, one thing I wanted to hone in on, because I don't know why I found it particularly interesting, and it has nothing to do, I want to be very clear, it has nothing to do with BX showing up, but it the concept within the 09A where they seem to be attracted to this idea of like the sinister feminine, and it's also like, which seems to be common in a lot of like pagan beliefs and other things like that, where they do seem to venerate the feminine, but this one seems to be specifically the sinister feminine within 09A. So I just like, could you explain that for the audience real quick? Cause that seemed to be some component they seem to aim towards, which I think would understand for anyone wants, I guess, everyone here knows what male and female kind of energy kind of roughly is. And I mean, I think most men have probably had a crappy girlfriend or friend that was a girl or something. And so you can kind of understand what a sinister feminine might mean. And I think that kind of is a good way to explain both 09A and 764 and how they operate. It seems to be through, subterfuge, manipulation, social pressure, stuff like that. So I think, I found that interesting that seemed to be part of 09A's beliefs. So could you explain that a little bit more for the audience? You're muted. Oh, you're muted.
Me?
Oh, yes. Yes, please.
Well, they kind of have this. I think the ONA is different than maybe some of the old kind of male-centered groups, occult groups, is that they're much more like they have kind of involvement of females in different kind of groupings. They like admire the Baphomet picture. And, I think that they have different rituals and things like that for women. So I think that their views are a little bit less like male-centered, I would say, by reading them.
Yeah. Dr. Kobo said the 09A originally ascribed the worship of a dark menstruating goddess they gave the name Baphomet to and claimed it was the same as a Templar deity, aka BS, which that does seem to be, I guess, to get back to the creation of this, it does seem like he smattered together a bunch of different ideologies, which I guess some people might, add claim to that, like, it was kind of BS, which I guess to some extent you could say that was, or he, through, exploration of different occult stuff, he could say he came to some revelation. I don't know. It depends on how you want to look at it. But does that seem to be, from looking at it, does it seem to be a smattering together of different, prior ideologies, like we mentioned, OTO, we just mentioned Baphomet, Templars, stuff like that. Does that correspond with 09A?
I think so. He was a member of the OTO and he knew Crowley types. So I think he was exposed to that and then rejected it. If anything, he's really a hermeticist and a classist. So he goes all the way back to kind of Greek esotericism. A lot of that's in the ONA. A lot of those ideas is what I would say that he is more fond of. And like I said earlier, like he was a pagan, a British pagan, so British paganism and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into the recent. I want to talk about kind of, I guess you could say this is recent developments, although it's kind of more or less just major media. I don't know what specific, if there's any specific new information that's came out. I guess real quick, BX, you might be, I believe you've probably seen the Fifth Estate video and you've probably read the Vice article by now. You'd probably might be a little bit more hip to, like, was there any real new information other than like anonymous sources? Because obviously I don't really count that because that's not really anything we can, you know, anyone can run with. Is there really any new information? Is it just the fact that these two big, the Vice and Fifth Estate, both ran with it essentially?
I think that they both ran with it, and they probably been running with, like, you know, working on it for a while. I mean, probably since, you know, late last year when all this stuff started to get kind of some attention, because there was like a wave of attention back when the FBI released that bulletin, but a lot of the attention was sensationalized, like by like really like tabloid type, you know, reporters that were, you know, not the most credible. Right. So it wasn't really something that most people took seriously. But I'm glad that Vice and that CBC put that out. I really am, because like you're saying, well, they didn't have that much new information, but we're small, so people don't really hear what we have to say. So it's good that that somebody else is talking about it. And I would also say that, you know, they both mentioned the 09A connection, which I was very happy about, you know. I was actually kind of surprised. I wasn't so surprised about Vice doing it, because Vice has like covered 09A like a lot, right? They've always been kind of like on that beat. But CBC, to me, that was like, okay, well, that's kind of cool that like some of these other outlets are also acknowledging that link. So it's definitely building up, you know, the public's, you know, the credibility around it, because like, you know, some of these people who you would think would be like talking about this have told us that it sounds fake and stupid, basically, you know.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place by working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies. We keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
So it's kind of like, well, there's all kinds of evidence. You just Google it, right? But people just immediately jump to that. It sounds fake and dumb. So I'm glad that it's getting some credibility.
Yeah, I agree. Although I will say there is a... between the Fifth Estate and the I keep blanking on this, Vice, there was definitely some spin here and there and stuff I didn't like. I will admit, you mentioned the sensationalism. I felt a little attacked at first, and then I realized, oh, now this has been reporting from the past. You informed me about some of the other stuff. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. And they did reference within the article later something like some of the like pedo hunters and stuff, and that kind of characterizes maybe you shouldn't be a vigilante. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure we all have mixed feelings on that. Well, I guess consider it, because we could be considered vigilantes, but we're not to the extent they're doing.
But if you read all the way to the end of the Vice article, they have a section in there about some like actual vigilante groups that call themselves pedo hunters that are in these telegrams. And like, that's who I think they're talking about, because those guys are kind of reckless. And in the article itself, it even talked, they interview one of the guys who says that they're in there distributing child pornography as a way to entrap them. I'm like, that does not sound like something I would recommend anybody do. What's wrong with you? Honestly, that's a terrible idea. Do not do that. So I think that's what they mean by vigilantes. I mean, we're not out there trying to like, you know, like doorstep these guys, you know?
Yeah. William, you may have some thoughts. I thought you unmuted. Oh, you're unmuted, but I'm not hearing any volume from you. I don't know what's going on. If there's issues with your mic.
I think you might be talking.
No, I'm like talking to myself. they had one guy who got caught in the, killed in the real world, right? Didn't they have an African-American guy who was like Rosen, who like confronted pedos and they shot him?
Yeah. Well, that guy wasn't like Rosen though. That guy was actually like kind of reckless, and I think Rosen does a much better job of being really nice and trying to de-escalate, whereas this guy was the opposite of that. He would just go and try to basically like scream at them and stuff.
Okay, I didn't know that. But yeah. I mean, still, it's dangerous.
Yeah, it is.
Like, and also trading, like what they're doing online is really, can get caught up in this stuff. It's crazy. It's
you go to jail yourself. You know, they don't really care. One thing about you know, the vigilante aspect is like, you know, when I worked with Alex Rosen to take down this like YouTube pedophile, Josiah Mizukami, it's a crazy story, but you know, what happened before he caught on was that some ordinary gamers, which is like a giant channel, Mudahar, right? This giant channel, he did a video about it after I had been talking about it for a while. And I kind of helped him with a video thinking, this is great. We're going to get like big eyes on this. Well, the eyes were so big that a vigilante group formed and they doxed him all over the internet. But the problem is that they doxed his family where he didn't live. They doxed like a family full of kids and like his brother or something, right? Like, so that could get somebody killed, honestly. It's really dangerous. And it muddies the water for investigators. And it's just generally not something that we can encourage because it's reckless.
Yeah, there probably is a line with the muddy in the line with investigators because, you know, once again, I guess this is a matter of degrees. To some extent, I guess people could make the argument that we're sort of doing that by, you know, some of the stuff we've done and breaking this stuff so quick and trying to get it out. But I mean, I would also make the argument that and maybe BX or you, William, both of you probably can speak to this, that you know, if the FBI tends to not really be doing their job in a lot of ways, at least it seems like that. Maybe they have some big grand plan. I'm just supposed to trust the plan and believe that this is all going to work out and the feds are going to come in and save the day. And, you know, oh, they caught all the child molesters, which they probably will eventually. I'm more of the opinion that voices like ours are what kind of put the screws to them to like actually do it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't have any thoughts with you guys, because I think a lot of people would make the claim that, oh, we're, you know, interacting or, you know, exposing their, you know, ongoing investigations in some way or whatever, because in some of the scoops and stuff, and because I don't know, that's kind of the feeling I get, is that they do almost, the FBI would probably rather some people not be meddling in this to, so as not to, I don't know, make them look bad, because it looks like this has been going on for years now. So, and they've supposedly been aware of it. So what's going on? Why are we just now seeing arrests? And it seems to be only once public outcry happens.
Well, as far as like interfering with the investigation, I know that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I think that the FBI is leaning on people like us in some ways. And, you know, if they're not like, you know, they are watching our accounts, right? Like they're paying attention, and they're, you know, in a lot of ways we act as bait, you know? So really we're drawing all those accounts to us and stuff. And so I guess if the feds were watching and monitoring, that would probably be beneficial to them in some way, but I can't really see how we'd be interfering with anything, because most of the stuff that they're doing is going to be digital forensics, collecting, analyzing electronics and stuff that's happening. So now I would claim the opposite for those vigilante pedo hunter guys that are in there pretending to be members and, you know, throwing child porn around. That now that does, because they might waste their time tracking these guys down, and they're end up just being some dumb guy who thought he was doing something good, but now he's got a child porn charge.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I think you make a good point. I think that the feds are probably watching everything. They're probably watching this now. They're probably watching the people watching us. So in a lot of ways, why are people interested in the story? Do they have ulterior motives, sinister motives? But I think that we're just repeating. Like, I would never, unless I was said I was speculating, I would try not to speculate. These are all things that are already in the news. They're already being reported by the government. So I don't think that I'm trying to harass or antagonize anybody who's brought up on criminal complaints. I feel like I'm just doing objective reporting. Mm-hmm. On an important story so that other people don't get harmed or kids don't get harmed, or, you know, these kids are probably damaged for life. I mean, can you imagine like scarring huge things? Like that one story in the story that by Mac Lamoureux today, like she had scars all over her body. Like they'll probably be there forever unless she gets surgery or something like that. Like that's crazy.
Yeah, there were claims that they got one kid to kill they might have even said the whole litter. Or at least just one of their kittens. And like, I don't know why that one, like, don't get me wrong, there's way worse stuff that we've talked about. For some reason, that was a gut punch, even reading that. Like, to go to the point where you have that much sway over a child to where you get them to murder a kitten, which is like, objectively, one of the most adorable, precious little things in the world, other than maybe like an actual human baby. So it's like, I don't, it's just so dark and twisted. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I was just stating just kind of the horror show we're dealing with here. I mean, I guess maybe this is another side question. How have you guys handled your mental health? Do you find yourself spiraling with some of this stuff? I know, William, you've covered a lot of the 09A. I'm usually pretty good with a lot of this stuff is remaining, pretty callous and objective. But sometimes a lot of this stuff really does kind of it fucking. I have kids, so it fucks with me. So I don't know. I guess any thoughts for you guys? I don't know.
Yeah, it's really fucked me up.
Well, that's simple.
I think that I had probably too much stress or anxiety over it. I don't think I handled it that great, but I'm kind of callous and used to it. Like I've been harassed so much for my Crowley stuff in West Memphis 3. Like public. I mean, I've been called every name in the book. I've been harassed. I mean, I've been people try to set me up. Those are like my stories, but like, I feel like that's what God wanted me to do is tell these stories because it's important. And so for me, that's my kind of purpose is like, I feel like I'm exposing this and bringing light to it. So, for sure.
I mean,
think that what's messed me up has not been like being afraid of, like threats, but really just the type of material that's being shared and some of the stuff that, and not so much on the 09A side, none of that's really gotten to me at all. I just find it fascinating personally, but the child abuse and the animal torture and the gore and the, some of the really nasty stuff that I've seen in there has definitely stuck in my head and I don't think it's ever going to leave. Which is another reason why when people have been trying to post on my threads, like, hey, here's a docs of this guy. And I'm like, please delete that because the docs includes all of their telegrams. And so I'm really trying to warn people against going and seeking this content out because it really is traumatic just to see it. Like, that's the point. They're trying to traumatize people by seeing it. And it re-victimizes the victims too, right? Because that's their extortion blackmail material that you're looking at. And so that also can, the causes the victim stress. So I've been trying really hard to like encourage people not to go seeking it out. I wouldn't. And, I guess the other thing that's really gotten to me even more than watching it in there is like hearing, like I've spoken one-on-one with a lot of the victims and a couple of minor victims, underage victims, 13, 14, 15 year olds. And, it's brutal hearing their stories. I mean, it's terrifying. Like as a mother of a daughter myself, I think that's been the most mentally upsetting part is just hearing their stories and hearing, how they're dealing and knowing that like, they'll probably never be completely okay. Right.
No, it's like some kind of trauma abuse. And it reminds me a lot of the Keith Raniere NXIVM cult where they abused the women and then kept it against them. And Scientology did the same thing.
So and then got them to abuse others.
Right. Good point. Yeah. So you see that kind of playing out, that same kind of phenomenon playing out with 764, cultish, cult, whatever.
Yeah. The cycle of abuse. And like, I think one thing we underestimate is like the generational nature of such an abuse, right? Because if their goal is to corrupt the youth, corrupt the kids and like, perpetuate this evil, sinister, agenda, then what better way than to fuck a kid up for life so that they, and then get them to mess other kids up and abuse other kids. And now you've got this generational trauma where they grow up into adults with issues like that. And it just perpetuates itself. It's very, very sad.
Yeah. Hurt people hurt people. I have two daughters and so it's like, and they're kind of older now, but like, I feel like there's a common, at least maybe it's just me, but I feel like typically, especially with girls, there's this like period of time where, between 9 and 12-ish usually where they're in this very bizarre, awkward, transitioning phase to where a lot of times they do go through some weird behavioral, be a little bit depressed, a little bit moody. So it's such a messed up but also weirdly, creepily ideal time for these people to strike. And we have these, these tools that they're using. And I mean, I really do want to expose this shit because it's like, I think people need to be aware that this is real. I mean, I think too many people have gotten conditioned by satanic panic to just dismiss this stuff. And you know, and to be fair, I guess like they don't actually worship Satan, I guess, depending on your definition of what Satan is. But that is kind of a catch-all term, Satanism, occultism. But even if you say occultism, most people will roll their eyes because, but that's a little bit different because they don't, usually don't even know what the hell you're talking about at that point. But it is just dark. I mean, it seems to be the MO with 764 is they catch them at this vulnerable age. They get them to self-harm, which isn't really too much of a push if they're already depressed, whatever. And then they just kind of then pick, and then you just keep, see how much of their soul they can destroy, essentially.
Yeah.
And the whole way through, they're essentially holding the rest of their soul as collateral, essentially. Like, hey, we'll completely destroy you, or at least, you know, your ego, at least, if you betray us or do anything I don't like. I mean, I guess I don't really have a point there. It's just dark shit, and it's just like borderline sinister genius. I mean, I hate to put it that way, but it's gross, and I think people need to be aware of it.
Very effective. Because
this is an MO out there, and you know, I don't know. I mean, if that means you need to actually be a fucking parent and say, hey, no, you can't be on this chat app because you're 12 or whatever, you know, like, sorry, you can't, you know, like, I don't know. I mean,
kids are sneaky too. You know, they wait till their parents go to bed and, you know, like they do make really cool apps where parents can like helicopter the shit out of their kids online, see everything they do. Everybody should have that. If your kid has a cell phone, you should be able to see everything they do. You know, there's no trust at that age, honestly, when it comes to online predators. Right. And this is the same kind of idea of like, well, yeah, when I was a kid, yeah, our parents didn't helicopter us. But if I were to tell them that I was skipping school to go over to some 40-year-old Satanist's house, they would definitely be like, you can't do that. And, you know, that's not one of the things that you're, you know, we're trusting you to do. It's the same thing online. You don't know who these people are. So you should never trust your kid to talk unsupervised to adults online.
Yeah, my impression is parents, modern day parents, care even less than our parents did. I mean, I had kids when I was like 18, like when I was like really young. So, and I'm like 33 now. So, 32. But still, so most parents are probably like a good 5-10 years older than me. But even still, it's just like my impression is most other parents just kind of let them do whatever. And I don't know if that's just modern day parenting, at least amongst my kids' generation. But our parents, at least, I mean, I don't know your parents, you know, BX, but me and you are roughly the same generation. They very much were like, you know, kind of let you do whatever for the most part. But
well, I had a Nokia flip phone.
Yeah. I mean, but obviously like, we didn't have the tools.
Right. So, and it comes down to a lot of technological illiteracy. You know, like the landscape has shifted so rapidly that most of our old millennial Gen X parents don't really understand technology, right? It's easy for kids who are really smart to like find ways around their parents' supervision. And so it's tough because, you know, just like we found ways to sneak out, right? Kids are finding ways to sneak their phones. And it's not just enough to supervise your kids online, right? And say, oh, my kid doesn't have apps on their phone, so my kid will never get in a situation. I can't tell you how many times I've seen these live streamed incidences where kids are convinced to do sexual things by these sick people, where it's like 3 or 4 girls in a room, right? They're at their friend's house. So it's the same kind of idea as like, you know, as a self-defense expert and like a gun person, right? That I tell parents, you have to teach your kids about gun safety. Mm-hmm. Even if that gun safety is just what to do if a gun comes out, how to immediately leave the room and call an adult, don't touch it, tell people not to touch it, leave, right? Even if you don't have guns in your house, their kids still need to know what to do if they go to a friend's house and that happens. So you need to do more than just supervise your kids online. You need to teach kids at an age-appropriate level about the dangers online and about the strategies that these people use and how they will convince you of something and what that looks like. And I think that's a big gap that doesn't get talked about. We all talk about supervising kids online, but we need to be teaching our kids how to identify predators and avoid them. And if they're old enough, they need to be told these stories straight up. Mm-hmm. You teach your kids about unplanned pregnancies and STDs and stuff, right? You need to teach them about extortion networks and what bad people online can do with their pictures. And it really is like a scared straight situation where, you know, the kids need to see it to understand.
Yeah, I had this discussion with my oldest daughter today, actually. So I was like, she was like, why are you wanting to know, have so many questions about like something she was supposed to be doing, or I don't know, like a soccer game or something she was going to. I'm not going to give specifics for people out there, but she was like, why do you have so many questions? I'm like, well, let me tell you a story. And then she's like, oh, okay, Dad. I'm like, yeah. So like, yeah, I have questions. I mean, it's not that I don't trust you specifically. It's just, there's another world out there and I need to be aware of what's going on. I need to know everything that's going on with you, like everything. Yeah. So like that's literally my job. But I want to bring it back to the stories. And I did notice, and I think this is inevitable, and it's already kind of occurred, this will get heavily politicized. And I can already see somewhat of the angles. This will probably take form as it becomes more and more politicized, if it continues to gain steam, which I think it will, considering the publications that just covered this. But I kind of get the vibe where it's going to become this right-wingers are racist and they bang kids and it'll be with censorship now, which, I mean, there might be some arguments depending on what app you're talking about where that is the case. But I guess kind of want to get your thoughts on the politicization going forward, just kind of how this will go. And I mean, I guess it is just kind of what it is, to some extent, that there will be politicization. And to some extent, it is good that the information is getting out there. But I do think people do at least need to keep their eye on the ball and probably what matters in this story, as opposed to getting caught up in the gobbledygook that is inevitable to come. But Ramsey, go ahead.
I would say that people have to get past the whole politicization of right and left, Republican and Democrat, and get back to right and wrong. So let's get past the political parties. Let's get back these false binaries and do what's right for the kids. Like, people aren't doing it. I don't know what happened. Like, my generation was just natural. I mean, there were problems, but nothing like today. So I think that it's a distraction to say this is a blue or red issue or something like that. It's a human issue about everybody. So I would say I reject any politics. I don't know. Like, what do you politicize this? Is the Democrats going to say you're a fascist right winger and look at it this way? Like, and it's interesting you bring that up, Jose, because some of the responses to our earlier, when I did an interview with BX and Ken Silva, the responses came out of like, how are you thinking about this? Like, your mentality of looking at this problem is so skewed already before you even looked at it. Like, they called me a far right person or something like that. I'm not far right.
I got called a Nazi the other day for sharing a Pepe meme.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean by that. I actually have I believe in the Bill of Rights and like individual rule of law. Like, that used to be called liberal, but it's funny. It is funny how I think it's really just a symptom of our society where we have to be on some kind of team that like we're all together and we think the same and it makes us comfortable. And then there's a bad guy over there who doesn't think like us, instead of looking at it independently and going, is this bad or good? Like, it's obviously, this is totally evil, so I think that 100% of the people should be against these kind of crimes taking place. So I think if you're thinking on those terms of like your party's in the right, you're out of your mind, because both parties are pretty lousy.
Right. I've said this since the beginning. Like, if we can't join forces against these people, we're lost. Like, these are the types, like, nobody is pro this, no one, right? That said, there's a couple of main things that I think I've already seen happen. The first one is obviously a lot of people on the left and some people, on the right, center, libertarian, immediately try to lump this into QAnon, right? And that's a big thing that QAnon did. QAnon fucked up the advocacy space. Right. They made everybody who talks about child trafficking look like a crazy. And especially when you add Satanism in there, it's like, I mean, it's really, I think people will get over it now that these like other outlets have started covering it. And because we're putting out it in a very rational way and not sensationalizing it. Right. Because we're showing the facts and showing what's happening and also trying to explain that the Satanism aspect is really just something to like sensationalize it for them. Like, that's what they want to do. Right. The other way I've seen it spun, and this is unfortunate, and I know you're going to see this when the Kyle Spitz stuff finally takes off, which it will, because I do believe he'll be arrested. And I think right now a lot of these outlets like Law and Crime, they probably just are waiting for that because they don't want to like dump the gun and put out a piece about him and then, you know, get sued. I don't care because I don't have any money. But when it comes to like, you know, the Kyle Spitz thing, the first thing I saw was like, oh, he's a femboy. He's trans. It's a trans thing. Right. And I got really upset about that because I'm like, you know, that's he has this femboy Instagram and a lot of them do. And the reason that they have those isn't because they're trans. They're doing it to groom LGBT kids. And the truth is that kids who are LGBT or curious or, you know, which is every kid now. Right. But they're kids. Kids are kids. We don't care if they're weird and going through phases. Like, they're kids. They need to be protected, period. That's not, it's not an issue, right? And the big thing we should be talking about is how LGBT kids are being targeted by this group specifically and how they're more vulnerable. And let's have an open, honest discussion about that, which obviously, good luck, right? But I'll tell you guys a story that I haven't told anyone yet because it just happened, kind of happened the other day. Well, I think I mentioned it to Jose, but like, I was in the talks with somebody who was associated with Libs of TikTok about the Kyle Spitz story, which I wasn't thrilled about, but I hadn't followed Libs of TikTok for a while anyways, because I just don't follow them. So I thought, okay, yeah, big outlet. That sounds good. 2 million followers. Hell yeah. Let's get that shit out there so I don't have a target on my back anymore. Right. But then the more I talked to them, I started to follow Libs of TikTok, and it's just like trans this, trans that, trans, trans, trans. And I was like, ooh, I don't want this article. I don't want them to put something out and then it goes that way, because consider that a lot of the victims are kids who might identify that way. And imagine a bigger insult, right, than having your story told and having it blamed on, you know, LGBT when, you know, that's that. So I didn't want to hurt the victims in that way. And so I talked to them very, very seriously that says, like, I'm only going to give you the story under the condition that it's not politicized. It's not blamed on liberals. It's not, there's no trans spin, or else I revoke my permission. And they said, oh yeah, maybe we'll try to get it out to some outlets. We'll figure out who can do it. But after I said that to them, they started to just string me along, string the victims that I'd given them, sent to them along, and just being kind of dicks, being fucking assholes to us, straight up. Until finally, I had a conversation with one of the victims' moms, and she told me, like, you know, my daughter's LGBT and I can't imagine this coming out and ending up, you know, in this situation. So we revoked our permission 2 days ago for them to use our story. And they are really mad. They are really mad. They don't really fucking care. They get really mad. They said, well, we have enough of our own evidence that we've been investigating. They kept calling me hun. We're investigative journalists, hun.
Yeah.
So,
interesting. Lesson learned. It's really unfortunate. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's unfortunate. I remember when I was researching Global Death Cult, I reached out to a group in the UK called Hope Not Hate, and they just strung me along too. I was like, I'm really looking for this article about Maya called the UK's most dangerous Nazi. Can you find it? Oh, sure. 2 weeks later, they wouldn't get back. But I wasn't the appropriate, I didn't come out with my left-wing credentials or whatever. I'm independent. Like, I don't have any part of the coalition. So, like, what do I need to do to get your help? And it's like, finally, somebody actually found that article on archive.org, which I couldn't find it either, but it worked out okay. But it was just like, they literally slow rolled me. Like, I think they intentionally slow rolled me. Like, instead of saying, go pound sand right away, which I would have appreciated, it was like, oh, yeah, we'll get somebody to help you. And then that guy said, oh, I'll get somebody else to help you. And then he said, what do you want help with? And I said, well, I've asked this question like 10 times. And then they're just like, okay, I'm giving up. But it's interesting because they got their hand out. They got their hand out for money. They want definitely more people's money.
Well, these assholes, man, I could show you all. I mean, I won't unless they try to start some shit. But, like, you know, they basically were like talking about how I came on Jose's podcast and like, oh, you're just giving it to any. You're just giving the story away. We told you we were going to run your story and you're giving it to other people. You look retarded. Like, I mean, it was really ugly. Like, they were being fucking awful. And I was just like, what? Like, this was such a terrible experience. Like, look, I was just trying to give you breaking news. Here's the info. Do what you want with it, right? But yeah, man, seeing
it
how.
Seems odd. So it just goes back to, like, the politicization money. Jose's talking about. Like, get over it. We should all be working together the same.
You don't get clicks. Over. Like, if you put out a story and go, oh, like, look at this horrible child abuse ring that's very real and sad. It's like you might get some clicks, but if you go look at this child abuse ring, it's horrible and sad, and the guy was trans. Like you just made thousands of more dollars off of this because they're making money off of it. Their accounts are. It's gross.
Because then the trans community comes and joins in. Is that it?
Well, Lips of TikTok is just a giant hate farm now for that. Oh, okay. It's so cringe and like so kind of like this is what they're focusing on instead of like the real issues, right? And so I'm glad it's a weight off my shoulders that we figured out that this was a terrible idea and revoked it. Because yeah, they can make their own story. Sure. I can't stop them from doing that, but like, I don't want the victims to feel like I led them to an outlet that was going to do them dirty. Like that would really fuck me up.
On the LGBT point, though, I mean, I don't remember if Kyle did this specifically, but I know this was, you know, there were multiple 764 people that would do this where they would kind of farm around identities. And I think they would intentionally infiltrate, you know, LGBT or, you know, different types of not necessarily just LGBT groups. And they would, you know, pose as them. So I think there were some like fake trans or femboy or whatever, or gay accounts out there where they were just stealing other people's identities. A lot of times people that they had actually groomed prior, you know, in different situations, and they would just steal their identity and use that for fake ones to lure other people towards them to do the same thing all over again.
Kyle Spitz was doing that. He was using another person's pictures from Instagram, just pulling his pictures and putting them on his page.
Like that's how dangerous it is. Like, like it's a catfishing too, right? Isn't that what it's called?
They were catfishing,
catfishing, like, so they're catfishing the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, and adults get catfished. So imagine if you're 12 or 13, like you don't have any idea.
But even before I was researching this stuff, you know, I was onto a lot of grooming. I've seen a lot of grooming in Discord servers. I've seen a lot of other malicious, just individual actors, not coordinated networks, but just bad people, child groomers on Discord and stuff. And like, it is so much more common to see them targeting LGBT kids and targeting them because of their confusion and preying on that vulnerability. It's a vulnerability on top of being a kid's already, you're already vulnerable. But now on top of that, you're giving them this like, oh, your parents hate you. Your parents don't accept you. Your parents don't accept your gender identity, right? These people don't accept it. We do, we accept you. And so, they're using that as a tool to groom kids. We should talk about that. We should talk about that in a nonpartisan way. How do we protect our kids from having, you know, this vulnerability exploited by people?
Yeah. One last thought on the new media and kind of spin that they're putting on it. I have noticed, and I think there might be some nuance to be had in this conversation that, and this is kind of what I was getting at, where like kind of keep your eye on the ball, because a lot of people are going to want some sort of solution to help with the problem. And I think a lot of people are looking immediately at legislation and specifically in regards to a lot of chat apps and stuff. And I'm kind of a Luddite when it comes to tech stuff. So, I mean, I would say depending on the thing there might be something to that, depending on what specific platform we're talking about and stuff. But I do think that's the knee jerk and most people don't understand the nuance. Like, I don't know, certain apps that may not be feasible depending on the purpose of it to have 100%, unanonymous, you know, interactions with it or whatever. Like, for example, hell, even my this is an open secret on my show that my name's a pseudonym. Like I started this when I was still active duty military. So like, I just was, you know, and other reasons is too. For example, you know, the story I'm covering right now, I mean, I wouldn't be like super upset if I got doxxed, but like, I mean, whatever. I prefer not to, especially considering some of the stuff I cover and, you know, why would you want that information out there? So there is a legitimate, you know, reasons why people want anonymity on the internet. And it may not be feasible to completely legislate this away. And I think maybe the real, you know, point should be kind of, you know, parents be more aware. And then also I do think there is definitely something to be said on the law enforcement side of things of, hey, what are you guys doing? How was this not dealt with a long time ago? You guys have inflated budgets and ability to do all sorts of other things, apparently, you know, lock up every person in the, you know, related at all to J6, you know, in the most efficient fashion possible. But we don't have the, the will to deal with literally kids being sexually manipulated and in some cases, actually molested and child porn and stuff like that. So I mean, I guess just kind of you guys' thoughts on that generally, wherever you want to take it, because I think there's something to be said that the knee-jerk reaction is we must legislate.
Yeah, that's not going to work. I would say that we're in a new era of online mechanics or phenomenon or whatever. And just like my kids were taught about stranger danger in the real world, I think it's time to have something like that, whether it's in class, I don't, you know, the public schools or private schools, maybe set aside a time to people miss a day and actually get, you know, some of this training, like, hey, this is what catfishing is. This is what some people do. These are terrible stories about, you know, person X. This is what happened mm-hmm. to them. This could happen to you. So mm-hmm. maybe there's an educational thing, and this I think is helping, because this will, you know, be like a pebble in water or ripple out, and people will be like, oh, guys, you got to watch out. So I think just being aware of these dark issues, I mean, especially for adults, is the first step. But I think there may be additional training in a place for, like, online. I mean, and there's so much online nightmare stuff about bullying, this kind of thing, people's reputations getting busted because somebody took a picture of them the wrong way. So there has to be some kind of, like, place, whether, I mean, ideally it comes from the family. I think a lot of these victims are atomized or isolated. That's why they become victims. So that's another problem. So maybe there's a place with the state through the schools to teach people or kids about, like, what can go wrong. Just like when I was growing up, they had us take, I feel like we took like 5 hours of, like, learning how to drive and horror stories about drinking and driving. And I think it was good. Like, they mm-hmm. showed us stuff that would be crazy. That was called Blood on the Asphalt.
I remember that one. Oh, yeah, my God. No, Blood on the Asphalt.
We would be wow. This is, like, there was literally like a human
dead
heart
bodies
on
yeah.
the asphalt by itself. That's what they would show us. I mean, it's terrifying. But I never got in a drunk driving accident. So maybe that's like the society, the resources of the society have to be changed. Maybe the FBI can put out like this thing about 764. Maybe they can put out, like, they actually, in that 764 missive, they actually showed things to avoid, right? Mm-hmm. They said, this is happening and this is how this doesn't happen to you.
Or so, how to look for signs of it on your kid by bruises and
Right. So I think public awareness is a panacea. It is an inoculation for these types of things. So getting the message out, I think, is a better solution than just legislating it, because this is real world that we're in now. Everybody has a phone, everybody's online. So I think that's a good first step.
Yeah. I was going to, I mean, exactly that. And I would also add to spin off to that, because I agree with everything you said, obviously, the inoculation portion, which is interesting you said that, because I was like, in my mind, it's like the first word out of my mouth was going to be this inoculation, right? Which there is a lot of evidence that inoculating people to stuff like this can really help them make better decisions when they're presented with that avenue in the future. The flip side of that is that the inoculation theory is definitely being abused, along with all of these other kind of concepts of censorship, like preventing things. And, you know, it's being abused by people with political agendas who get federal grant money to go, you know, push these like programs on kids. Like, there's one, the DHS TVTP grant program, which I've been talking about for months now. But there's one for like esports where they're basically tricking parents to put their kids in this esports team, which is secretly a DHS funded inoculation, like, you know, where they're like, all right, we're going to give them surveys about how racist they are and then have them play all these games, and they give them more surveys about how racist they are and then show them video and then test them again. I'm like, but nowhere in there does it say that they're going to tell the parents or the kids that they're being targeted by this like psychological study, which to me is just like alarm bells going off, right? State funded psych studies, not good.
That's psychological warfare. That's psychological warfare.
Yeah, so that's that. That's where, but they're doing it under the guise of, oh, inoculation therapy. We're keeping kids from falling into terrorism, right? So you got to be careful, like, that the state doesn't actually oversee that shit. but then I'll also say another kind of aspect of this, that I was actually typing up a tweet about it that I'll probably post tomorrow, because I saw something about Eliza Blue. She's a Twitter child advocate, and she hit the nail on the head by saying that some of these child exploitation issues on social media have made their way into these vast overreaching online censorship bills. And they've basically been the fodder for these bills. Like, oh, see this huge, horrible problem here. We need to censor it, right? Because of the kids. And obviously that's very emotional. It's definitely an appeal to emotion, right? When you're trying to convince people that you need this vast overarching online censorship bill. It's an online safety bill for our kids. And some parts of the UK online safety bill, some parts of it were good. Some parts of it were necessary, but then other parts of it were just absolutely just intended to censor people. And so that's what, you know, she had kind of pointed out that in a lot of ways, platforms not being able to control the child exploitation material leads directly to this legislation of censorship. And so it's in the platforms, it's not just in the platform's best interest, but in the country's best interest for platforms to proactively do this kind of thing. But we know that doesn't happen, right? Like the Twitch thing, you know, Twitch didn't actually get their shit together until Bloomberg blew up the investigation about that massive predator ring. And the government stepped in. The UK, you know, Ofcom stepped in and said, fix your shit, or we're going to tank you in the UK. You're not going to have a platform here anymore. So obviously a big, you know, big, huge company like Twitch is just going to bend over backwards and do whatever they say. And so that's what we're seeing now. Twitter's doing the same thing. Don't let them fool you with their, you know, we're not for censorship nonsense. You know, the tweet that I'm making right now, it has to do with how I was banned on Twitter a few months ago for 10 weeks with no reason. In fact, when I came back, my Twitter, my data didn't even show a violation. So they just banned me for no reason. Mistake, right? And it just so happened that the same week they banned me, I had started to speak out about this problem that Twitter was having with bots spamming links to Discord servers where they were selling child pornography. And the links that they were spamming, the bots were spamming it 100 to 200 times per minute. So like you would type in the keyword, which I can say it now because they fixed it, but the keyword was Discord. So if you type Discord into the Twitter search for about 8 weeks, if you type Discord in the Twitter search, you would just see child porn. Like, and it was horrifying. And people at Twitter didn't even know what to do. You know, and so when I finally started speaking out about it, because they didn't fix it. It was 8 weeks that we had been screaming about it to them. And then they banned my account for 10 weeks on accident. Whoops.
All right, guys, we're getting a little long in the tooth here. Yeah. So let's get out here. I appreciate you guys' time. William, can you let people know where they can find your work at? And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, all my books are on Amazon, and you can get signed copies at my website, William Ramsey Investigates, and my podcast is in the top 0.5% in the world. It's like top 15,000, and you can hear you can listen to me drone on a wide variety of different subjects. But I have a lot of good guests. I have some other interesting, a lot of authors and things like that. So.
Yeah, if you want to dig into the lore of, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. but if you guys want to dig into the lore of 09A, I highly recommend going to your podcast app, and you can just type in 09A or order or whatever in the search bar and look through all of his material, and you will find a ton. You have more than enough research you can do there. BX, where can they find you at?
BX_on_X. Then there's a link in the bio there if you want to follow the breadcrumbs to my other links.
Someone asked if we could do a Q&A. I'll do a couple. I gotta get out of here if you guys are okay with that. Otherwise, we'll just have to not. So
yeah,
I saw they're masking. Yeah. Maybe if you guys have any questions. Yeah, maybe some other time. Let's get out of here. Hey, I have a Patreon, and you guys, I give the option when I drop these in the Patreon to ask questions ahead of time, so you guys can do that if that's what you want to do in the future. Otherwise, it's at my whim when we do questions for these live streams. But with that, we'll get out of here. Appreciate you guys' time. Appreciate everyone who showed up. And we are out.